Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening once again, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen. You're at the PRF table again. I'm one of your hosts, Brother Dunlap. We also have Brother Feaster and Sister Sanders that are here with us, and we're just, to be honest with you, we're just honored that you've come and taken your time out of your schedule to come and sit down at what we call as the table. And we want to let everybody know that, you know, whether you've been led to this place or whether you're coming on your own free will and accord, you have the freedom to listen. You have the freedom to participate, which we hope that you do, because what we're going to do on the PRF table is we're going to have open and honest conversations about possessions, resources, and finances. We've had a lot of good shows over the last couple of weeks. Brother Feaster, how are you doing this evening?
I am doing great. I'm sitting here thinking about the last few shows we had as we've been focusing on stewardship. You know, we introduced Attitudes of Stewardship on February 14th. Then we have Brother Saheed on February 21st who sat with us from City as we engaged on the subject of diversity and stewardship. And we kept it going and got real specific. We dialogued on stewardship about home on February 28th, which gave us a foundation for our February 7th show, Stewardship at Work. Then we had a dialogue on stewardship at the church. And boy, did we get in it and get deep. So now here we are, today's show is titled Commodities and Outsourcing. Well, really could be looked at as part of, you know, two types of stewardship at the church. All I can say is to the listeners, is have a seat at the table and let your mind and your heart receive. All right, JR, let's get into today's shows. I'm excited.
You know what? This is the first time I heard you get excited just from the jump, brother. Nobody had to prime you up this evening. So you already came already ready.
Yes, sir, I'm ready.
And I know you had a long week, so and I know what you've been doing for the military, so appreciate you doing what you had to do on that end and taking the time out to come with us on tonight's show. And Sister Sanders, my cousin, how you doing this evening?
I am doing good. Just really looking forward to having a great show on tonight and just doing what we always do, just, you know, speaking the truth and speaking from our hearts, from our compassions and from our own personal convictions, and just looking to have a good time on tonight.
And I'm excited as well because we've been talking about this stewardship principle. We've been doing it for so long, and it seems like we've been doing it for several weeks, and we have. And what I know is that we've had a lot of listeners that have been coming on the show. Listening to the show and making comments. We've had, last week alone, we had about 610 people that actually listened to last week's show. So I'm just happy. So, Adia, what's on your heart so early in the show?
Well, as everybody knows, every Thursday, this is our opportunity to come to the table, to sup together, to really just talk about those hard issues that we may not be able to talk about in our churches, that we may not feel comfortable enough talking about with our everyday people that we interact with. But we know that at the table, when we come to the table to possessions, resources, and finances, we are able to talk about those real-life issues that mean so much to us, that has so much meaning to us. And so we're going to just recap from our last week's show. We talked about that it's not the pastor or the ministerial leader's sole responsibility when it comes to leadership at the church. What are the necessities of the church? So we asked a couple of questions. And in keeping it in perspective, we want to make sure that everybody understands from our last show that the work that we do at the church is nothing more than serving, and that we are to utilize those precious, valued people that we have in our church who are already in our house and not going to the outside and bringing people in that when we have people that can do the same job. And we also talked about making it a priority to support the talents and the gifts and the abilities that that the people have that they're bringing to the table, that they're bringing to our churches every single week, and that we can't be wasteful. It's important that we keep this in mind and that we recap and just tie this into today's show, because we want to value our people. We want to know that we're not going to underutilize them, that they're not going to be undervalued, underappreciated, and unregarded, because what they have is so important, and that our people are a resource. And as leaders, we have to be effective in our communication. We have to understand that we don't use our role as a means to strong-arm people, but we use our role for the upbuilding of the kingdom and to embrace the gifts and the talents that the people that our people are bringing, but also understanding that the responsibility of stewardship at our church lies with everybody. It is not just a sole responsibility of our leaders, JR. So I just think it's important that we recap that as we go into today's show, and just let everybody know that we're live and that we want to engage and embrace everything that's out there. We want to embrace everything that everybody has to bring to the table on tonight. Bring it back to you, JR.
What? Go ahead. That's my cousin right there. You know, it is so funny because I think those who have been listening to the show, Adia and Buff Easter, for so long with us, I think they're kind of used to y'all going off at the end of the show. But for whatever reason, y'all don't went off at the beginning of the show. It's kind of like going to church and you come, you know, I know some people sometimes may come late because they know the pastor is going to preach at the end. But what happens if the pastor changes up and preaches at the beginning of the service? You may miss something. So that's going to be something to those who are going to be listening to the show by archive. Don't wait for Adia and Brother Feaster to go off at the end of the show. They better come to the beginning of the show because you never know what they may miss. You know, it's a couple of things that you said, Adia, and I think it's important. You know, we were talking about resources, and I remember, you know, we got into this whole mode of resources because this is a show about possessions, resources, and finances. And it's not a show just about money. You know, yeah, money is involved in this, but it's about how possessions, resources, and finances actually interact with one another and how every one of those components of PRF is based upon the activities of the other one. So, and I like the last point that we had, because we had posted all this on Facebook, as everybody may know. You know, we must not be wasteful. And I think a lot of times when we talk about we must not be wasteful, I think when somebody hears that, they may be thinking about physical possessions. Like, you must not be wasteful of your money. That's a true statement. But we also, which is a precursor to what we're talking about tonight, we must not be wasteful of the resources that are around us, like the people, because the people are the most important thing that's out there. So tonight's show, everyone, is about commodities and outsourcing. And we're going to talk about it. We're going to take a quick little break at the beginning of the show, as we did last week. But when we come back, we're going to talk about, you know, what are commodities? You know, what does that word mean? It's not just a thing of economics, which is really, really deep. We're just going to break it down and talk about it in real simple terms. And in addition to that, we're also going to talk about outsourcing. A lot of times the understanding of what people have in regards to the term and what the word outsourcing means is you think about loss. You think about people losing their jobs. So it's something that I just want us to go to, because last week we played this from Kendra the Family Stone, and I'll tell you why I'm playing it again so everybody can listen to it. So after this, we'll come back and we'll get deep down into it.
With the economy down, it's amazing how not working can shine light on what you're working with. Dark times need enlightenment. We gotta wake up, open the blinds, pull back the covers, and get from under what's not important. No more inflated values, missed priorities, or irreconcilable divorces. Love is in need of assistance, so we need to change the system and redefine where the wealth is. Saving Wall Street don't mean nothing if we can't pay attention to what's relevant. Us, the state of you and me, is in need of more stimulation than economics. We need more investments and spiritual kisses and more intimacy between partners. You see, money is backed by gold currently, but that real currency is making this house a home for you and me, backed by what we do and how I love and respect you. loan modifications for houses, but there's no foreclosures on this home. We own this, no loan on this. You're my 401k, my retirement. Everything I own invested in your feelings. Wide awake and sleeping with my future on this. It'll take more than a bit of pressure to hold down elevated consciousness. I just play the kindred souls everywhere, able to bear witness and feel this.
And brothers and sisters, you know, like I was saying last week, you know, if you listen to the words of that song, you know, they talked about the economy being down. They talking about, you know, we have to wake up, open up the blinds, pull back the covers, get from what's not important to us. But the key that I think is important for this week's show is no more inflated values. Brother Feaster, the way that we, and you brought this out a lot, the way that we value certain things, the way we value people, is an indication of how we treat them. So how you treat your stuff, how you treat those resources around you, that's how somebody's going to be able to have an interpretation of how good of a steward you are. One of the things that I liked about that was he said it would take more than a depression to hold down elevated consciousness. So what we're talking about with this show and every other show that we have on the PRF table is raising our level of consciousness, raising our level of awareness, and you have to be open to receive that. So when you sit down at the table, just be mindful that it's not about changing all your mindsets about every single thing. It's just about you being able to say, you know what, I never looked at it that way, or maybe I can look at it in a different perspective. So let's just get down into it. You know, I'm gonna tell you why I played that. I know a certain community not too far from where I'm at. 80 people are about to lose their job come tomorrow. A hospital that I'm familiar with is closing down in a very small community. And I was talking to my assistant the other day, and she was telling me that it's not the fact that 80 people are losing their job. There are families that work at this location that are losing their job. So, Brother Feaster, check us out, Sister Sanders as well. It's not that out of the 80 people, it's only one side of the family. It may be the husband and the wife. It may be the mother and the daughter working there. So guess what's about to happen? A community is about to be devastated. You hear me, bro? You hear me, sis? A community is about to be devastated because it's a small community. And I think about that, and I think that when situations happen like this, the God that we serve is the type of God that wants us to be proactive, not reactive. And I've said this before. So now God places us in positions to see and be a part of certain things, and he places us in positions to see and be a part of certain things to see what are we going to do with it. Remember when we first started this whole conversation on stewardship several weeks ago, one of the things that we talked about that we mentioned was Adam was only given a part of the garden. He wasn't given the whole garden. So I think that's one of the key things that we're trying to get across to the listeners is whatever piece you have to play in this whole situation, play that piece. It's just like with me playing basketball. Most of the time when I play ball, I'm usually playing in the center because I'm tall. Play my piece. And if I try to play the guard position, that's not going to work out too well for the team because somebody else is going to get the rebound. What happens when somebody else gets the rebound? They're going to be able to help the other side, the other team, to score points. And right now, when we're talking about this from a spiritual nature, I'm like last week, I'm tired of the enemy getting so much credit for what he's not even doing. It's really sometimes what we're doing. Go ahead, Brother Feaster.
I was sitting there listening to.
Hold on. It's amazing how I know what you're thinking, right?
I know, right?
Go ahead, bro.
I was sitting there listening to the story you mentioned about the hospital closing and the 80 families. Not people, but families. And I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate. You know, what's the difference between 80 people and 80 families? They're really, the severity may be different, but there's no difference between 80 people and 80 families. it may be severely more devastating because the husband, because the wife, because, you know, more than one person in the family. But still, you know, if we get past they're losing a job, they're losing a sense of security, they're losing a sense of hope, they're losing, you know, a peace of mind. I mean, the money, you can replace money. You can get another job making twice as much, half as much, you can sell some stuff. But when you start talking about things that we don't value with money that comes with the job, it doesn't matter if it's 80 people or 80 families. And well, it does matter if it's 80 people versus 80 families. I just wanted to play that little devil's advocate with you first on that one.
Well, you know what? I don't even look at it as being the devil's advocate. You know, that's real talk. As we always talk about on the show, you know, one person, one of the three hosts that host this show don't have the answers to everything. So just as we sit and we talk about these different topics that come up that God gives us to bring to you, the listeners, the bottom line is, you know what, I never looked at it like that. And what you're saying, bro, is right. You know, because some people are going to just say, some people may not know that it's 80 families. Some people may just say, just look at it as a number. Well, there's 80 people that are losing their job. And it may be vice versa. So, you know, this is what I say. However we need to look at it to be able to say, God, what do you want me to do? If I need to look at it and my heartstrings says, you know what, God, what do you want me to do for those 80 families? What do we say, bro? What do we say, sis? Let's do it. God, I got you.
That's right.
If it's about 80 individuals, God, I got you. And, you know, it's not about us doing everything for everybody. It's just being in position. Be in the position that God wants you to be in to help. Because, again, you know, I remember last year in a closer community to where I live, a plant actually closed down or a facility closed down, and 426 people lost their job. See, I didn't know the context about the families. All I knew was the numbers that the media put out. 426 people lost their job. And to see those people walking out of that job for the last day, they came to work that morning and they didn't finish out the day. That's a touching situation if you have a heart for people. The difference between the two communities is this. The closer community to where I live, 426 is a drop in the bucket compared to a couple of 100,000 people that live in that city. But 80 is a very high percentage to only a couple of thousand that live in that other community. You know what I'm saying? So the question is, you know, what type of value do we place on these different situations that come up? And at the same time, what are the different type of resources that are out there that we can use, that they can use to be able to help people with the different situations? Because, again, you mentioned something too, Brother Feaster. You said it's a loss of their security, a sense of security. And I don't care what anybody says, to be honest with you. You who are working, who have been blessed to have a job right now, if your paycheck doesn't come, most people, if a paycheck don't come, we're going to have a problem.
That's right.
We don't have a problem. You being in the military, Brother Feaster, let your paycheck not come on the 1st and 15th, and you still want me to serve? Got a problem with that. Got bills to pay. It's going to affect
other people. I've been through that twice already.
You say what now?
I've been through that twice already. You're exactly right. You know, the security that comes, you know, the security that comes with being in the military is on the 1st and the 15th, I'm going to get a paycheck. That's the security that we live by in the military. And twice in my military career, that security blanket has been removed or so close to removed that I can feel the cold wind coming through the window.
Wow, that's deep. That's deep. So, Sandra, did you have anything? Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, you know, even with the loss of security, the trust in God for those who know him as their personal savior far exceeds that security, because we know that we're covered and that he's going to make a way. And what I liked about what Feaster said when he was talking about that loss and sense of security, I just like the fact that even though there are 80 people or 80 families, the what came to mind was just the indirect and the direct impact on what that's going to do. And sometimes I think that we don't look at, we may just look at the number, but we're not looking at, you know, if they have children or family members who have medical issues. We don't look at, you know, people who have child care. We don't look at, you know, if they're living on, you know, in a family house, you know, on property that has been in their family for years and they still have the property taxes to pay. And so when you look at all of that, you know, there's a direct impact to the individual who's losing their job, but there's also an indirect impact to those family members who are going to be impacted by the loss of just that one family member losing the job. And then when you look at the bigger picture of it, is that now the money that was coming into that community, they're going to be, it's going, there's going to be a loss. And so when we look at, you know, our people and the value of them and their work, you know, it far exceeds, you know, so many other dimensions that most people would just look over and not even consider to be important, because they would say, well, you know, they would look at, well, that's not the 480-something people that lost their job last year. But like you said, for that community, it is a very, it's an indirect impact, but it's a very direct impact for that individual who's going to lose their job because of that sense of security. But we know that, that when we trust in God, he far exceeds anything that we could ever hope, put so much value into, because he is the creator of everything, and he is the source for the resources that we need to survive.
So, Adil, I'm sorry, I had to jump in, JR. Adil, you said a couple of times that we should trust in God. And I'm a diehard Christian, and I'm not going against you, but I just want to ask this question. What does trusting in God mean when I'm walking out of the building for the last time and I've been at this job for 20 years and this is all I know?
Trusting in God means that you know that something else is going to come. And I have been in situations, I can speak from this from personal experience, when I graduated from college, you know, everybody thinks that you're just going to get this job and you're going to make all this money. But the reality is that most people that graduate college don't get a job right off. And I was one of those people. I was working at a staffing company, and I worked there for 90 days. They said I was overqualified, so they didn't hire me. And I remember sitting in my living room so down, so out, that I was like, okay, God, I don't even know what's going to happen, but I trust you so much to know that you are not going to just leave me out here with nothing. And so my trust in God, if I can just speak to somebody on tonight, my trust in God was that I had to hold on when I didn't know what was going to come next. I didn't have anything lined up. I knew that I was coming on active duty, but I wasn't coming on active duty until 3 months later. So trusting in God meant that I had to hold on to the word. I had to hold on and really just had to believe that even though I didn't see anything, that something was coming. And it took for me to really just to continue to pray. And I'm telling you to pray. I prayed like I never prayed before. And I said, I refuse to believe that God is going to bring me this far to leave me. And I know that that may sound cliche-ish, but it was my truth. It was what I had to hold on to. I had to believe that God was not just going to leave me with a son to take care of, and that because this job ended, that nothing was going to happen, that my whole world was going to come to an end. So trusting in God meant that I had to believe in what I did not see. And I don't know if that makes sense to anybody. I don't know if that rings any truth to anybody. But trusting in him is just really believing when you don't know what is going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
That's what trusting in God, that's what it meant to me. And it meant that I had to do some things. I began making phone calls. I started looking for jobs in the natural realm. I had to do something. I couldn't just sit up here and just say, okay, God, I'm going to believe you. But I had to take some action. And even though it was painful and it was hurtful to know that I didn't know what was going to come next, trusting in God meant that I'm going to stand firm on his word. I'm going to believe and I'm going to pray and I'm going to do something in the natural realm. And that's what I had to do. That's all I could do was hold on to what I had believed in, that God wasn't going to bring me this far to leave me.
You know, Brother Peter, did you get your answer?
I think I got my answer there, so.
I'm sorry, but I don't have a magical answer, but trusting in God is that you don't give up, no matter what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't give up.
And this is what I like about us having the conversation, because again, one of the things that I do know, I hear people and I've heard people say, and I know I've said it, that sometimes we as ministers, we as Christians, can be so heavily bound that we're no earthly good.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that sometimes we just have to be able to say, look, let us break it down to just a real simple level. What you said, Sister Adia, the Christian may understand that, that's going through. The non-Christian may not understand it. But you know what's also the reality? A Muslim may understand exactly what you said as well. A Jew may understand exactly what you said.
Mm-hmm.
People understand things differently. So we have no idea who God is touching through you to what you said, or what Brother Fisa says, or what I'm going to say, or what I have said. So the thing is, we just say what we know works. So let me push it to a point of talking about where we're really getting to the heart matter of tonight's show. And what I'm thinking about, Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders, is really just taking, you know, individually this whole subject or conversation about commodities, and then talk about outsourcing, because I think it's really, really important that people understand the things that we value, the people that we value, it makes all of the difference. We can't talk about stewardship and not have a discussion like this talking about commodities. So let me just tell you, you know, Brother Fisa, you may have different definition, but a commodity is just something that is of value. It's something that is used in trade. So, for example, when some people hear the word commodities, money is a commodity. The actual dollar bill that we have in the United States of America is a commodity. Grains, energy is a commodity. All of those things are valuable to some people. They may not be valuable to me from Philly because I don't see grains being traded or used, but they're being used in a bigger perspective, in a larger scale. I was thinking about also one commodity that I think most people can understand, which I think is where I'll try to use. You know, gold is a commodity. Diamonds is also a commodity, right? Most of us who are married and a whole bunch of people who are not have diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
Or some type of gold. A lot of people. Now, I was thinking about diamonds particularly. You can't get to a diamond unless a certain process happens. Because I don't know if you know it, but diamonds come from coal, if I'm not mistaken. And it has to go through a very stringent process for coal to become diamonds. But here's what I also know about this precious commodity. A diamond doesn't get on your finger, Brother Feaster, unless a person is involved in that process.
Wow.
So that commodity by itself is nothing. Let me tell you another one. Stocks. Brother Feaster, being in all of us in the military, right, we have TSP, which is the equivalent of a, quote-unquote, corporate 401K for all intents and purposes. It's like the 401K that we have being members in the military or federal government. Now, my TSP, I remember several years ago, remember when the stock market crashed?
Right.
Our TSP account looked really, really good. It was really good. It had, you know, a lot of value to it. and we lost about $20,000 in the one day when the stock market went down the tubes. Now, here's the thing. The amount of money we lost was considered the value. We had, let's say, for example, we had 1,000 shares of all different types of stocks building up into that portfolio. And the value of that, if we were to cash it in the day before, it probably would have been, we would have got whatever, the $20,000. But the fact of the matter was, because of other external forces that occurred in our world, the value went down because of decisions that people made. And when that value went down, a whole bunch of people started tripping out. People started tripping out because they said, this $20,000 of TSP or 401k that I have is no longer worth $20,000. It's only worth $1,000. What am I going to do? They didn't understand the value of that whole amount was based upon what somebody else was saying, but all that most people had to do was really hold on, Adia. All they had to do was really hold on for a while, because eventually what was going to happen was, which it did, things were going to increase, go back up. So now I'm thinking, wow, what type of process do we use when we're thinking about other commodities within the church, within our organizations, within our families? It takes people to make everything run in this world that we live in.
Right.
And to your point, Brother Feaster, and I'm going to just be quiet and let y'all go. Value, 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 value. If we don't value and understand that we are the most precious commodities that God has put on this earth, we will never be comfortable enough to know that God can take us from this point to that point. We will never be at the point, Adia, where people would do like you said, trusting in God. Because we're looking, we will be looking at something else. I'm thinking about those individuals, those 80 individuals that is about to lose their job tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm thinking about what are they going to do. I'm thinking about what commodities are within that community that's going to help that situation for those families, Brother Feaster, and for those individuals. What's going to happen? Sister Adia, Brother Feaster, y'all take it away.
I'm listening to you, and I really think you hit on a lot of things. And it seems like the more we dive into stewardship, we have really, really, really emphasized value. I think in the question that you propose, the question is, do we value those 80 people or 80 families enough to want to do something? Because
wow.
I value the fact, because I truly understand what it means to be a father and your daughter look up in your face with these sad puppy dog eyes saying, Daddy, I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking in the cabinets and there's nothing really there to feed my daughter. So I understand how these fathers and these family members and these, you know, mothers, how they feel having to go home after those doors are closed with the thought in the back of their head, you know, I still have to feed my family. I still have to provide a house. I still have to provide electricity. I still have to, you know, I need gas to go get these jobs. But those of us that are not in that situation, do we value this small town enough that we're going to do something about it?
Mm-hmm.
I really think, you know, and I'm not a politician. I don't know much about politics, and I may sound stupid for those of you that understand politics. But blame my ignorance, not my stupidity. But this is a question that has really been in the news these past couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is, it is my right, it is my obligation to go vote every time the polls are open to elect my officials. And my understanding is, when I elect these officials, they speak on my behalf to the next higher official.
Mm-hmm.
So my whole thing about this is, I see them wanting me to sacrifice. So I'm active duty military. This equestrian is affecting my pay, and one of the incentives that got me in the military of tuition assistance being 100%, you know, my tuition 100% paid for.
Right.
So they want me to sacrifice, you know, not only my life, my time, my family, now my education, to include my health, because the Army, you know, the government pays for my all. You know, so they want me to sacrifice it all, be it in America, in Iraq, in Korea, wherever they send me, no questions asked, which I raise my right hand up. You know, they want me to do all this sacrificing, which I proudly serve. I honorably serve. I thank God. I love my job. But these politicians want me to proudly serve and do all this sacrificing. But I have not seen anything in this equestrian in the news or anything. I've not seen anything where the politician has said, "Well, you know, we're gonna give up our vacation pay to help it out, or we're gonna do it. They did everybody else pay freeze a couple of years ago that worked for the government, but I never heard them do a pay freeze.
And they're not. They're not.
So that goes to show you that the people that we're putting in office. And you know, when the polls open up again, I'm a vote. I'm a voice my opinion with my vote. But it goes to show us that they don't value us as much as we value them.
Hmm.
They want me to sacrifice, but they won't sacrifice. And in the position that they're in, regardless if they value me as a soldier, as a father, as a man, as an African-American, or whatever other things that you can put behind me, regardless if they value that or not, that is their job to value me. That is their job to value the words that they speak on my behalf. It is their job.
Well, Brother Feaster, you have sparked up some conversation in somebody. So we have a caller that has pressed 1 on our dial pad. I'm calling with the last 4 of 7607. You're on the air. How are you doing this evening?
Doing just fine. I was listening to the conversation and really got excited about what the gentleman said about holding our politicians accountable for making people valuable. And what came to mind was the fact that most business owners, and even politicians, only value people who bring something to the table or who they think bring something to the table. And I've even seen this in some churches as well. As long as you are tithing or as long as you are participating, then you're valuable. But when you begin to have needs and your needs extend beyond what you're giving, then you're no longer seen as valuable. Now you are a liability. You're not a commodity. You are a waste of resources. And
wow.
I've even seen that in the military also. As long as you are physically healthy and you are producing, performing, you have access to whatever you need. But if you get hurt, if you get strung out on drugs, if you lose your mind in some way, you are expendable now. You're no longer a value, and you are taxing our system. And so as our country tries to get a hold of a new economy, a global economy, and tries to maintain its competitive edge, yes, more and more people are becoming expendable. And I'm not sure what the answer is, but I do think that this is a valuable conversation because God sees us as commodities.
Wow.
God has created us to be fruitful, to multiply, to replenish the earth, and to manage it, to subdue it, to rule over it, to be good stewards over it. And if we can't steward ourselves, if we can't govern ourselves, if we can't value ourselves, then how are we supposed to fulfill our function or our purpose in the earth? Mm. I think that our leaders are just simply short-sighted. They don't have enough vision to cover every single person. They only have enough vision to cover what they can see and create, what is productive. And so, you know, there's truth in what you're saying about who we select, who we vote in. You know, people can have a wonderful platform, but when it comes down to really supporting those who are in need, that is a tough task, even for those who have experience, because if you have more people in need than you have people giving out, it's tough. Those are hard places, hard decisions. Well, and somebody's going to fall through the cracks, and it's unfortunate, but I don't necessarily think that we have to devalue those persons. But their value probably comes from work. You know, their value comes from the things that they possess. And when they don't work and when they don't possess things, they themselves don't value themselves. And then others don't value them. So I know I've said a couple different things, but those are some things that came to mind. In this dialogue about having humans as commodities.
All right. Well, we thank you. Somebody needed to hear that, my sister. Somebody needed to hear that. So thank you for what you do. Thank you for how you serve as well. We really appreciate it.
How do I get back on mute?
Just press one. I'll put you on mute on the switchboard, and then press one. We'll see you. And if you want to come back on and have another comment, and just press one again and we'll bring you back.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. You know, one of the things, Brother Peace, Sister Sanders, that I really, it really struck me when she said it was, God sees us as commodities. You know how that expands to so many different levels? Because she just said us being the creatures that he created. It's simple. I am one of those Christians, those ministers, brothers, whatever title you want to put in front or behind my name, that really believe that this Christian walk is really not as difficult as some have made it to be. It's real simple. God sees us as commodity. What is a commodity? Something that can be turned to the advantage for a particular purpose. He sees us as valuable enough. Man, we just got to get it together. We have to get it together. I really appreciate the fact that the sister mentioned also that we must value ourselves. If we don't value ourselves, why would we expect somebody else to value us? So talking about this community, this small community that I referenced earlier, they have to come together. They have to be able to show that they know that they are valuable by what they do. So it's a collective effort. And Brother Feaster, you had mentioned something as well. You mentioned something about coming together. And if you recall, when we talked about from the book of 2 Kings chapter 4 with Elisha and the widow with the oil, and if we go back to that text, one of the biggest premises was this woman was in debt. She had a situation. She went to a man of God, said, "What can I do?" He didn't give her the answer, right? What he did, he said, "What do you have in your house?" So it took that woman that widow who had two sons who she thought was going to be taken away or could have been taken away because of the debt that the father left behind, mentioned father, left behind. That's a note for us as men. And it's amazing how when she went back to reflect, she said, oh, I have nothing but these jars. It wasn't that she understood what the purpose of those jars were for, but she understood that she had something because it was given to her and opportunities for her to reflect. So I think, Sister Sanders, that's one of the things that we're looking to be able to do on this show. And we know it's working because of how many people are listening and commenting and being and sitting down with us. We have to help people to show, to see the value that they have in themselves. We have to be able to help people to know who they are in God, why God created them, what Christ did for them, for those who are of the Christian faith, what Christ did for them, for those who are not of the Christian faith, because that's us speaking about somebody else. So we have to get to the point where we're helping individuals understand how valuable they are, how resourceful they are, because mm-hmm. there's a whole, out of 80 families, there's a whole bunch of resources that's there.
Oh, yeah.
There's a whole bunch of resources that's there. So it's not about looking for somebody to hurry up and get them out of the situation. It's coming together as a community to say, okay, what can we do? So here's the thing. Somebody may not have had that much food when they learned on Monday that they were not going to have a job on Friday. They may be the type of family that goes out and buys groceries next week. So when they get laid off tomorrow, there may not be a lot of food in the house, right? But what can happen? The same thing that happened in 2 Kings chapter 4. That woman went to her neighbors and got the oil for the jars, or got the jars to be able to allow God to use those jars to fill it with oil. Only if the people realize how resourceful they are as individuals, if the people realize how resourceful they are as a community, then what you're talking about, Brother Feaster, you'll have politicians scared. You'll have politicians scared. Why? Because they realize, you know what, the people are going to come together. If I don't do what I say I'm supposed to say, or if I don't do what I say I said I was going to do before I got elected, then I know my butt's going to be out of there. Maybe earlier than expected.
Right.
So maybe there's the need for, again, people to understand how resourceful they are. That means it's about community. It's about community and it's about relationship. And if we don't have community, if we don't have relationship, what else do we have? We can say all day long, I got Jesus. You're ignorant. You're ignorant. With all due respect, you're ignorant. If that's the only thing that you have is, I got Jesus, well, yeah, you'll go to heaven. But the life that you live on this earth, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. This thing ain't about what happens just when we get to heaven. It's about the life that God has created for us to live down here on this earth, but we have to take some control over it. Sister Sanders, go ahead, cuz.
You know, I was listening to the lady as she was talking, and even as you were talking, you know, you touched on something. When you were talking about the diamonds, I'm going to start there. When you were talking about the diamond, you know, that the pressure that is formed, you know, when diamonds are being made, I think we're feeling that pressure right now. So we got to know that even in the midst of the pressure that we're feeling, we got to know that it should be developing us even the more. And those ideas, those dreams that have been placed inside of us, that's what's being developed. And a lot of times when the pressure is on us, we look at it as a negative thing, and we don't see the positive. We don't see what's really going on. And so sometimes we can become lost into the American dream. That pressure is there. It's going to form something that cannot be destroyed. That pressure is going to build our character. That pressure is pushing us and propelling us into a place that we've never been before. And it may be unfamiliar. It may be I'm uncomfortable. Yes. But the pressure, the end result of from that pressure is going to produce something that is valuable. And a lot of times we miss that so much because we don't understand our real worth. And so with us as being commodities, we have to know our worth. And we have to know that just that even though things happen in life, that it could be used as a stepping stone to take us to a direction that we never thought that we would be. How many books have been written? How many movies have been produced? How many clothing lines? How many daycares, businesses have been opened because people, the pressure that was put on them, they took it and said, I got to do something with it. I can't let it go to waste. And so the diamond, they use themselves as that precious commodity. And the other thing that was just that just came to mind as you were talking, Nate, is that when we have these man-made rules, it changes the game. So we have politicians who can say in one breath that they want to cut the budget, raise taxes, furlough employees, take away tuition assistance, close down 50 schools in Chicago where the elementary kids got to go to other schools now, so you're going to have overcrowded classrooms. They can say that because their health benefits are being cut. They only work, I don't know, every time you turn around on the news, they're on vacation for 10 days instead of solving these issues that we have going on. So because they are the people who are pretty much writing the rules to the game, they can look at us as and undervalue us. But what's even more important is that even when things happen to us in life, we've got to know that we have the resources on the inside of us, that we are the resource, and that no value can be placed on it. Like I said earlier, there are businesses that are inside of us that we have been either scared, didn't know who to go to, didn't know what to do to get that business started. And so we really need to begin to tap into us because we are that resource. We are going to be the people that continue to thrive and strive even when the pressure is being placed on us. And even though in all of the unfairness, we got to know that, like we said earlier, that God has created something that is so great and it is so precious, and it hurts you to the heart and to the very core of who we are as people when the have can look at the have not and put a value on us and to make us try and to try to make us believe that because we don't have the money, because we don't have the status, because we don't have the best-selling book, because people are inviting us to go to colleges and speak at graduations, that we are not valued. And it's such a form of deception, and a lot of people have believed it, and they are believing it. But it is time for us to open up our eyes to understand who we are and whose we are. And even if we're not saved, to know that God created us and that he placed something down on the inside of us that no politician, no president, no general, no admiral, no bum on the street can ever take from us. And that is our God-given ability to create, to give, to bring ideas to the table, and to use what we have, which is us, and to come together and to drop the pride and to be humble and to know that we have everything that we need because he's placed it on the inside of us. Whether or not we know it is up to us to find out.
Wow, that's good. And let me add a thing or two. As you were giving that list of individuals, I think I'd like to add, and no pastor.
I agree.
And no deacon.
I agree.
And no trustee, and no minister, and no bishop, and no apostle, not even a man or woman of God who calls himself a Christian.
See, if we're not willing to talk about it from a real point of view, we might as well stop talking.
That's right.
Because it's not just the politicians. And, and Brother Priester, I do believe, yes, there is some, you know, we're not about pointing fingers or saying where the blame is. We're more about looking at what the root cause is. Looking at the root cause of something is not about blaming something. It's about saying this is the reality. At least this is my reality. This is how I see it. And if two people from two different cultures, two different sides of the fence, two different communities don't sit and have a conversation with each other, don't sit at the table, for example, then all that's going to happen is a blame game. When we might find out just by having a conversation with, quote unquote, the other, we may realize that the conflict that I'm feeling, you may be feeling as well. And how can we work through that? Brother Priester, let me, you know, we've been going for a while. Go ahead, and I know you had something that was burning in your heart. What I want to do after you make your comments, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about outsourcing and how that plays into this whole conversation. And let's also take a minute to read some of our comments on Facebook. So go ahead, Brother Priester, and then after that we'll go ahead and take a short break, and then we'll come back and keep it going.
Actually, yeah, I had another comment, but as Adia was talking, she really changed my thought, and I had to start writing some stuff down. She started talking about how the politicians, we're going to get off the politicians, because it's not just politicians. Well, I'm going to get off, I'm going to speak for me. But leaders don't see us, and I started thinking about whenever there's a major crisis, the news, there's a flow that the news does, and if you're not familiar with it, let me introduce it to you. The news starts off with the tragedy. Boom, the Twin Towers fell. Boom, the tsunami hit. Boom, Haiti happened. They start off with what happened. Within about a day or two, all of a sudden, they start getting people's faces on the news. They start going through the communities and start interviewing people, and the news reporters they're actually walking in the streets as much as they can. And what they're doing during that time is they're taking me from North Carolina and putting me in Haiti, putting me in North Korea, putting me in Israel. And what they're doing is they are putting value in my face. They'll put me in a situation to where now I have to, because it goes within the very being of me to help people in distress. And that's the way God has made us also. Instead of just making it so far away on the other side of the world or another state on the other side of the state, what they do is they put you right there in the middle so that now you can see, you know, you can place yourself in that situation. It builds up your value and how you value the people in that situation. And I started thinking about that, and I started thinking about a lot of times, like Sister Dia said, the leaders don't see us valuable until it's, you know, election time or voting time, whatever the case may be. But then in the midst of it, you know, that our value goes down because they have the position, and when it's get ready time to vote or whatever, then they show us our value again. But
or
if we say again?
Or build a building.
Or build the building, whatever the case may be.
An offering.
If we would show ourselves valuable, and what do I mean by that? You mentioned, JR, about the community. If they came together, they would show themselves valuable. Sometimes we have to put ourselves in the situation, either singularly or plural, put ourselves and to show ourselves valuable. I think a lot of times we, you know, and I got caught up in this a while back, and JR, you brought me back to zero. Sometimes I get caught up in, you know, man, it's 1,000 of us here. But there's people throughout history in almost every religion even that will one person made the difference. So if you can't find somebody to stand with, sometimes you just got to be brave enough and bold enough to stand alone and show yourself valuable. And if it don't turn out your way where you got the job or you got the promotion or whatever the case may be, you showing yourself valuable is more important than any vacation. any promotion, any job. So I said all that to say, and I'm going to sum it up by this. Sometimes we have to put ourselves in the position to show our value. You may not know my value because you don't know me. So now I need to show you that I'm valuable. And it don't have to be aggressive. It don't have to be, you know, in a real nasty manner. You know, Martin Luther King, he showed himself valuable and a whole entire community value simply by a nonviolent stand. So sometimes we just got to show ourselves valuable. I'm going to stop right there, T.R.
That's good right there.
It was good, you know. And I'm going to tell you this. If people don't understand, those of you who have been listening for this past hour with us, sitting down at the table, if you don't understand that you are the most valuable thing to God, he would not have created you if you were not valuable to him. He only sent one Jesus, but he sent a whole bunch of us.
Hmm.
Right.
Ain't the one Jesus, but he sent a whole bunch of us. That's a powerful statement all within itself if you grasp it. So that means for him to create all of us, he sent his only begotten son, but he created all of us. That means there's a purpose for why he created all of us. There's things that we need to be doing as communities. There's things that we need to be doing within our family structures. There's things that we need to be doing within our race, whatever your race is. There's things that we need to be doing. Let's take a quick break. Before we go on a break, I just want to remind everybody, you know, if you want to join into the conversation, press 1 on your dial pad. We would love to hear what's on your mind, what's on your heart, what God has given you, what are some of your experiences with this. If you haven't felt as valuable as we're telling you that you are, as God is telling you that you are through us, then we'd like to hear that. If you've overcome some circumstances in your life in regards to your possessions, resources, and finances, and now you're getting it, now you feel that epiphany within your heart that now I understand why certain things happen, why I had to go through certain things. It's because of I need to be in position or because somebody else had to go through something that I went through and I had to be that person that was able to be leaned upon. Think about the 426 people who lost their jobs last year in contrast to the 80 people who are losing their jobs tomorrow. Those who held strong, those who trusted in God, like Sister Adia said, now have a testimony to be able to help those 80. But the distance between these two communities that I'm talking about is about 35, 40 minutes. So that means there has to be some type of connection, some type of relationship between those two communities. And it may just be one person that knows one person from one community and one person from another. So when we come back, we're really just going to take this to the streets, and we're really going to talk about outsourcing and how we can use outsourcing to our advantage, not the type of outsourcing that you may have an understanding about from the business world, but how can we use outsourcing and that concept to better our communities, better our churches, or other religious organizations. So we'll be
You're listening to the PR Table. This is Brother Dunlap. We have also Brother Feaster and Sister Sanders. So, again, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to just sit down at the table with us and engage in this conversation. Tonight we're talking about commodities and outsourcing. And, Sister Sanders, I know you heard it, and I heard your comment as well. You know, we have to take this thing to the streets. I know last Sunday I had posted on my Facebook page that I had the most awesome time at church. And the 45 minutes that I stood outside with a brother from the church was probably more than I probably would have received inside the four walls. And what happened from that encounter that this brother and I had about a issue that I won't mention here was there was somebody who was stranded, ran out of gas, and happens to walk towards us in the church parking lot and says, "Can I get a ride? I have a gas can, but I need a ride to the gas station." And the brother that I was speaking to that was going through something was the first one between him and I to say, "Sure." It was no conversation about, "Will you take her, bro, or will I take her?" It was, "Sure." He responded. So as I played that song, you know, the song really touched me because, you know, the words of the song is, "You don't know me, but I'm your brother. I was raised here in a living hell," and there's a lot of people that are living in this world that consider themselves living in a living hell because of certain circumstances that possessions, resources, and finances may have them going through. He also says, and this was Michael McDonald, for those of you who don't know it, this was the blue-eyed soul brother. He says, "You don't know my kind in your world. Fairly soon the time will tell. You're telling me things you're going to do for me. I ain't blind, and I don't like what I think I see. Take this message to my brother. You will find him everywhere. Wherever people live, tied in poverty's despair. Are you telling me the things you're going to do for me? I ain't blind, and I don't like what I see." On behalf of Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders, myself, I can tell you for a fact, people who are listening to us, you're listening to three people who are tired of what we see. If you're tired of what you see, ask God to help you, reveal to you, connect with him so you can hear whatever he says that you need to do about the issues that are going on, especially in this area of possession, resources, and finances. Because if we don't stop talking about it and do something about it, whatever that it is, you're just as guilty as those politicians that Brother Feaster was talking about, that he knows who he's talking about. So that's not painting a picture on every politician. But you're just as guilty as them for doing the things that they're doing when you do nothing about your situation or about the situations that you see. So as we take it to the rest of the show, you know, outsourcing. Let me tell you where this came from, Adia, Brother Feaster. The definition is the practice of having certain job functions done outside a company instead of having an in-house department or employee handle them. It also means functions that can be outsourced to either a company or to an actual individual. You know, last week we were talking about stewardship at the church, correct? And one of the topics or the discussion, part of the discussion that came up last week was about the value of the individuals right within the house. Sister Dia, in the recap, you mentioned that as well. Here's what I found, and I'll let y'all chime in, and anybody else that wants to chime in, please do. Press one on your dial pad. We'll bring you into the conversation. I know for a fact that there are several churches in my community, and now I'm speaking specifically to the churches. There are several churches in my community. Matter of fact, there's 13 on one road stretch, pretty much almost from one light to the next. And I think about how many churches we have in our community, in my community. And I think about when I go to different churches, I can see or I hear, because I may know individuals, about the different struggles, which are the similar type of struggles relating to money, relating to possession, resources, and finances, relating to maybe somebody's lack of understanding about different principles in these areas. And I think about, and this is what I thought about, y'all. Why is it that we have all of these churches, all of these houses of God, where the people within them are struggling so much. And again, you know, I'm talking about my community. Why is that? What's going on? And for whatever reason, God gave me this thing about outsourcing. There is some value to being able to say, you know what? I don't have a financial ministry in my church to help the people. Think about those 80 individuals. If you don't think that money is going to be a concern for those 80 families, something wrong with you. Money is going to be a concern because, as Brother Feaster said, the security that they have is going to be gone. The security was the job. Not saying that they valued it any more than God. Maybe all of them said, you know what, I thank God for this job. But now they're about to hit some reality and know that the money that they were making come tomorrow when they finish up work is not going to be there. They're not going to get an additional check. They may not get severance packages like some certain CEOs may get after they've been with a company for a little while. So how do we take this thing to the streets? One of the things that I was thinking of is if you don't have a financial ministry, if you want to call it that, I call it PRF. That's how God gave it to me. But if you don't have that within your church and you're not willing as a leader of that particular church, whether it's the pastor, a deacon, or whatever the leadership role or roles are within that church house, and you're not willing to say, you know what, we don't have this here, but I know Brother Feaster around the corner at one of the other 13, 12 churches in this on this one street actually has that, and not willing to say, you know what, Brother such and such, maybe you can go down to the street five churches up the road and see Brother Feaster. Brother Feaster is anointed in this area. The church has this particular program for helping individuals that are unemployed or need some type of assistance with food or for clothing. So my frustration is that there's not enough of that going on.
Yes.
And I think there's some issues that we need to be talking about because it is all about PRF as we're talking about on this show. Why is it that some leadership just refused to let people, and I say let because people are hostage in their own church houses, but let people go outside to the profitable places, not the places that's trying to take their money, but places that are going to help them in their situations. It is beneath me that so many people are just struggling inside of our churches, and at the same time, they're still giving to God. They're giving. They're giving to the church, but in their mind, they're giving to God. That's right thinking. And I had a lady when we were ministering a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago. This woman and I spoke about PRF, and this lady came up to me afterwards and says this, y'all, and then I'm going to be quiet. She said, can I talk to you for a minute? I said, sure. And she says, I do the right things. She says, I pay my tithes, which I in love corrected her and said, you don't pay your tithes, you give your tithes. But she gives her tithes. She gives offerings when the pastor asks for them. She helps out people in the church when people in the church need some type of help with finances. She doesn't have any of those common vices, like she's not drinking her money away, she's not smoking her money away, she's not using drugs, she's not gambling. She tells me all of this. And here's what she says. There is something wrong. I'm tired of living paycheck to paycheck. I do what I know I'm supposed to do. I know that God is honoring everything that I'm doing, but something is wrong. I want better. So then I proceed to start asking her a couple of questions about where she's at, where she's worshiping at, and those type of things. And I said, well, the place that you're tithing, is this the place that God chose for you to tithe? She said, what are you talking about? I said, well, if you go back into Deuteronomy, that's when tithing was given as a law, that's where it was given. Bring your tithe to the place that the Lord God chooses for you to bring it to. So I never thought about that. I said, but that's going to be something that maybe your pastor may not want to hear. This thing is about thinking about what is going on. How has our minds been framed around possession, resources, and finance in the church and outside the church? So to my original point, Sister Sanders, Brother Feaster, y'all help me. What's the issue? What's going on? Why do we not want to, not we, excuse me, why is it that in so many of our churches
there is not this communal, this relationship between churches where if you got it and I don't, I'm coming over there to you. What are some of the issues that you see? Sister Sanders, Brother Feaster, however y'all want to do it, let's go.
I see one or, well, two issues, and I'm going to say the issues first because I'm going to forget them after a while. One of them is insecurity. And the other one is lack of knowledge. So let me break them down. I'll talk a little bit more about them. I'll write them down, too. But the insecurity part is I'm worried that if I refer a member, a person, well, I'm going to say a member, because if I refer a member, which is going to be, you know, closer tied to me, if I refer a member to another ministry, to another church, then my insecurities a step up because now I'm thinking I might lose someone.
Mm.
And then I'm going to tie that into the lack of knowledge because it's, and ironically, it may be knowledge of one area in the subject but not understanding the subject in itself. If I understand that, or if I don't understand that, the members are maybe members of this body of believers, this group of worshipers, but we're all members in the body of Christ. So insecurity and lack of knowledge is really hindering. You know, where I'm at in North Carolina, well, when I was in Texas years ago, once a year they would have the Tri-City Revival. And it was the three cities in that area, because there was plenty of churches. It was the three cities in that area. They would come together once a year and have a revival. And they would rotate not only from church to church, but from denomination to denomination. So you have a Baptist church hosting it, but you have a Church of God in Christ pastor that's preaching. Or you have a, you know, and that's how they did it. And they brought all the communities together once a year. And I was thinking about that in the city that I'm in. And what I see in this city is they barely get together for a fish fry. They don't even get together for, you know, handing out some biscuits or something. You know, there was a time when I was in this, in the community, and we did, you know, we had a health fair going on at a church. And we walked down the street, and another church on the same street in the same neighborhood, which is not one of the, you know, upscale neighborhoods, was they were doing some type of outreach. So we went down there to talk to them. It was like, hey, you know, we got a health fair going on, you know, when the people come through here, because they would hand out food. You know how people are when they come to hand out free food. But it was like, you know, send them our way because we're doing something also. And I began to think to myself, you know, that goes to show you right there. You know, it's good that both of the churches were doing this, but if those churches had known beforehand, there could have been some type of crack, there could have been some type of coordination that could have been done, and it could have been more effective, as opposed to, you know, JR's church is doing this and my church is doing this. We could say these two churches are doing this. And I think the payoff, it's so much better when we get out of our insecurities, when we get out of our and get out of our lack of knowledge, then we can make a difference. Then we can make that difference that we're looking for. And I'm trying to keep myself from getting on a rampant, so when I stop abruptly like that, I'm cutting myself off because I got about 10 more minutes in me.
You know, one of the things that I thought about in what you're really talking about, Brother Feaster, you're talking about barriers. Really, those are just barriers, things that are preventing us from living in the true community that we really should be living in with one another, with our brothers and sisters. One of the barriers that I thought about was pride.
Mm.
See, we got to call it. We got to speak to these things. You know, the word tells us to speak to the mountain, right? So we
right.
got to call it, let's go name it, and then say, okay, in Jesus' name, we're done with it. It has no power. It has no authority here. Let's get it out the way. But we got to speak to these things that are hindering people. hindering us, because we see it, and we can only do but so much. Brother Feast or myself is just saying, we can only do but so much. It's going to take other people that see what we see. And I remember this. I remember I was a part of the I was the vice president for the my local NAACP. And I remember my president saying to me, and this was several years ago, he said, "You let me be the voice. I'm retired. I'm 60-something years old. I say what I want to say. But you, young brother, you have a job. You got a family. Some of the heat that I can take, you may not be able to take because you're still within in your career." And that always stuck with me. So in reality is, if you have somebody speaking, what you can do, brothers and sisters who are listening, you can jump on with those things that you know are true, those things that you know are good, those things that you know are of God, that are about helping people. It's not about you doing it by yourself. It's about us doing it together. So back to this thing about pride. We have to break down these walls, these barriers, these spirits of pride, and say, you know what? I understand that you may not have it at your particular church. I may need to just say that to my pastor, huh? It's okay that we don't have this. But down the street, we know that is there. And it's okay that we don't have it. But I'm going to connect you with Brother Feaster down three churches down the road, or Sister Sanders, the ninth church on the same road, and not worry about what you were talking about, Brother Feaster, that insecurity. And see, pride has to say, you know what? We probably should have been had this in the church. Mm-hmm. We should have been had this in the church. We should have probably been had this type of ministry going on in this mm-hmm. church. But maybe it's because me as the pastor, my finances is jacked up. Mm. Maybe it's because I as the pastor or the leader, I need some help, but I'm battling that pride. We got to get over that. Pastors, leaders, y'all got to get over that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you something. From a professional standpoint, I know a whole bunch of pastors that are good pastors or preachers that are good preachers or ministers that are good ministers that help people, got some jacked up finances. I'm telling you, I know what I know, and I'm speaking from a professional standpoint here. I may know it, but everybody else don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, somebody who has been in this thing for a while now, I understand why some of those individuals are not going to have a financial ministry in their church. You know why? Because God is going to convict them. You know what, Pastor? You may need to sit in this class. I know you coordinated, but you may need to sit in this. Mm-hmm. I know you may be coordinating this, but you need to sit in this class. You may need to be honest about what's going on with your finances. You may need to cut down on some of the stuff that you're doing with your money. We got to do better. And we got to encourage others that are going through some of this type of stuff to say, you know what, it's okay. It is okay that you got this going on. And let me say something else. And Sister Sanders, I know you're burning up over there. If we as the men and women of God, especially in leadership positions, if we're not willing to be a little bit vulnerable, how in the heck we expect other people to come to us with their problems? Reverend Dunlap, I really need some help in this area of finances. And if Reverend Dunlap is living from paycheck to paycheck, one paycheck away from being in the lowest level of poverty in the United States, what am I going to be able to say to that individual? Oh. It sounds hypocritical to me. Sister Sanders, I'm done.
Well, I will tell you this. I grew up in a church where we won fellowship with other churches, different denominations, different races. And one thing that I have taken with me from my childhood church and my pastor was that we need to be able to have our own. But a lot of times we don't want to be honest. And I know we talked about this on last week. We're not willing to be honest. You know, to know that we have pastors, that we have leaders that are struggling financially, couldn't help anybody if they needed it because of their financial situation, or couldn't give anybody a decent pair of shoes, you know, really speaks volume about where we are. And I think the biggest thing, you know, I know Brother Fisa talked about trusting in God, but for our spiritual leaders, there has to be an increase in our faith. There has to be an increase in us gaining that knowledge and being able to apply it to our personal lives, because we can never take anybody where we have not been. You know, we can talk about being rich and wealthy, but if we aren't there, the only thing that we can have is a conversation about it.
And, that's right.
And I just always remember my pastor saying, you know, we got to be able to have stuff. You know, why can't we be homeowners? Why can't we own property? Why can't we pay for the car, pay the car off that we're driving to where it's ours? And the thing, a lot of the time, it's because we are lacking the education. We're lacking where to go to get the resources, but we're so quick to stand, you know, behind a podium or behind a pulpit on a platform to tell other people how God wants to bless them, but yet and still in our lives, you know what I'm saying, we doubt the very thing that we're saying. And I'm not saying this about all leaders, but sometimes I think that there is a level of doubt and a level of faith in what God can do, to the extent that when we come to churches and we still see people who are driving in cars that need tires, or they just need a new car altogether, and we don't have a means of being able to bless them with one, that's an issue. Excuse me. It's always been near and dear in my heart that if our leadership has nice vehicles, if they have nice homes, if their children can go to the private schools, our members should have those same advantages. But there is a disconnect. Like the lady was saying, you know, I am giving my tithes and my offering, and I'm being a blessing to other people, but every time I turn around, I'm living paycheck to paycheck. That is a problem. And that is a principle, a biblical principle, that even people who are not saved understand. And we see it in the businesses. We see it when you have longevity of businesses that have been in family for 50, 60, 100-plus years. And so those same principles that we're preaching and teaching about, the world has it. They understand what it's like not to be selfish and to give until it hurts. They understand what it's like to give somebody a place to stay and not worry about if the person is going to share that information, if they're going to talk about it. And so when we can get to a place to where things do not bother us and we are not consumed about what other people think, I think we can get a little bit further, a whole lot further than what we are. But sometimes we're so worried about what other people are going to say that we can't see past our worry. We can't see past that we're really not trusting God. We can't see past that the same issues that we're trying to cover up, that the person next to us has it, and they're looking for a way out. But the difference is that they're willing to admit that they have an issue, whereas we're not. And that's all I want to say. I can go on and on, but we don't have enough time.
Well, you know, like I'll always say, you take the time that you need. You know, nobody has the right to rush what God is trying to do. So if you got more that you need to say, Sister Sanders, the show has been extended for a little while longer, so keep on going if you need to.
Because I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated that we can't get together because we're so worried about somebody taking our idea. That's not our idea. The idea came from God. The source of what we do can come from two places, either God or the devil. And we're trying to take ownership and possess stuff as if it's ours, and we want to get all of the credit. You know, we don't want to share nothing with nobody, but yet and still, we scared that we're going to lose members. We don't want we're selfish. We want to sit up here and talk about faith, but we don't believe that God will bless us with the resources that we need, so we try to hold on to the members that we have, and God can't bless you because you don't even want to give. because you're scared, living out of fear. And when we can get to the place that we cannot be worried about somebody taking our idea but adding to it, then I think we can get a lot further than what we are. When we can sit up here and stop worrying about who going to get to the, find out about the store that we shop at where we get our suits from because we get a discount, then we would be like, hey, I want you to have a discount too because I don't want you to pay $500 for a suit. I want you to pay $100 for it because I'm trying to save you some money. We won't even share that information because we're too busy trying to look good but not realizing that, that we can help somebody else out. And if we can't give to people, then what are we here for? What is our resource? What is our purpose and our intent for being here? What is the existence of our very being if we're not even going to sacrifice to help somebody else out because we're too scared that they're going to get theirs before we get ours? And it's a crying
shame.
It's a shame.
You're right.
We want God to bless us. We want God to give us new houses and cars, but we got three cars sitting in our driveway, and we won't even let a neighbor down the street whose car broke down. We won't even give them our car to drive.
And this is what I'm thinking, Adia. I hear everything that you're saying, not just with my ears, but I hear it with my heart, and I think other people are hearing it with their heart as well. And for those who may have just tuned in or who don't know Sister Sanders, these experiences are the experiences of her, but they're also the experiences of many. She's just bold enough to say something about it. She's bold enough to say, this is not right. We got to do better. And let me say this also. This is not an attack on leadership. As Sister Adia, as you were speaking, two things came to mind. You know, this thing is about leadership. And the first thing was, with leadership, especially in the church, the one thing that I think is key is that what we're talking about, what we've been saying week after week or however God leads us to say it, is this is going to help others to help their leaders. If your leader, your pastor, when your deacon, minister, whatever that position or title is in whatever faith group you come out of, if they are like Sister Sanders is speaking of, then you are getting some tools that you can help them. You have some ways that you can encourage them. Hey, we can do better. But again, there's that relationship component that has to be there. So if you don't have the type of relationship that you're able to go to your, and I say leader, and I'm not putting them on any pedestal, just leader of that house or whatever that leadership position is, if you don't have that type of relationship, then what about somebody else that may have that type of relationship with him or her? But if you're up under that type of leadership, then guess what? You should be able to have that type of relationship, and they should have that type of relationship with you where you can say, you know what, we probably need to do something different. Let me share my heart with you and tell you that this is what I'm seeing, and it doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem biblical. It doesn't seem like this is the heart of God. I got to address this because the longer people be silent about the stuff that you're talking about, Sister Sanders, the longer they'll be in bondage. The second thing is, again, it's not about being super critical about the leaders that are out there. There are some excellent leaders out there. I think I'm a pretty good leader myself. The other thing is this. It's going to help some of us that are not in some of these positions that we're talking about to see the wisdom of God for our own preparation as leaders for the kingdom of God. I tell my assistant, I've told my soldiers this, and I say this all the time as I talk about leadership. You learn from two types of leadership, positive and negative. It's not about the individual. It's about the leadership. It's about what is being exhibited. In Christian terminology, it's the fruit that's being born. That's what I'm seeing. That's what I'm hearing from Sister Sanders and Brother Fiesel tonight. When they're talking about leadership, we talked about it on the last show, and leadership keeps coming up because evidently there is some problems with certain leaders and their styles of leadership that the people are suffering. So that's what I'm hearing. Sister Sanders, another thing, you know, we can, when you say that we can't take somebody or we can't do something, whatever that statement that you made about taking somebody somewhere that you haven't been, you know, you made that as a statement, but I thought about it as a question. Can we take somebody to a place that we've never been? You know, the answer is really maybe we can and maybe we can't. If God is involved, I don't have to necessarily be a drug addict to be able to help somebody with that particular addiction. If God gives me what I need to help that individual, then God has given me what I need to help that individual. But one thing that we can do, which is what we're talking about when we talk about this theme of outsourcing for tonight, if I can't do it, if I know I haven't walked that road, if I don't feel God has given me the tool that I need to be able to help minister to that individual, then maybe I can outsource it to my brother or my sister down the street or around the corner. Breaking down those barriers. Brother Feaster, we're about to wrap it up, my brother. What's your final comments for tonight? I think we've done what we came to do tonight.
I am sitting here and just ruminating on a lot of things that have been said. And we have hit for the last two or three weeks a lot on leaders and a lot on value. We have hit those a lot. I want to end my final comment with a very challenging question, because I really believe that, like we've said tonight, especially Adia, if we're not willing to do anything, then what are we dialoguing about? So I want to end on what can I do with what I have where I am? Because if we don't look inside to try to help fix the situation, you know, you got the Good Samaritan, you know, the Levite, he saw it, he came and assessed, the priest saw it, he walked on the other side of the road, but only one person made a difference. So if we're not willing to do anything, if we're willing just to, at a distance, oh, you know, that's just a shame, there's going to always be a shame until we, like you said, JR, have the courage to care. Thank you for my time. Thank you for your time. Thank you for the opportunity. And I hope that we've all been challenged, that we've been challenged to get up from, I mean, you know, Jesus prayed, but Jesus got up.
Yes, sir.
And that's all I got before I start all over again.
Brother, I appreciate you, man. I do. I appreciate our friendship and you know, the 20-plus years that we've known each other, and the fact that we're doing this after such a long period of time of having a relationship with one another, even though it wasn't constant, is just amazing how God works and how God operates to help his people. Because this thing is not about us. It's really about him. It's really about him. And some of these barriers that we're talking about, it prohibits individuals from getting closer to God. It helps drive people away from God because they can't see and can't live like Sister Adia was talking about, trusting in God. How can I trust in God? I'm going through all of this. And if those who are in ministerial positions, leadership positions, if all that you got is just trust God, send them over my way. I'll help them out. Sister Adia, what you got for us as we close out for the night?
I have to ask a question, too, is this: if we can't help someone, do we know who can? And are we willing to go a step further to find out and lend a helping hand? That's all I want to, that's the only thing I want to just leave us with. If we can't help somebody, do we know who can? And are we willing to go a step further to find out in order to lend a helping hand?
I think y'all got some hand claps all over the airwaves tonight with those two statements. So let me just say we thank everybody who's been listening, all of our online listeners, all those who have hung around, even as we extended the show a little bit. It is really about helping individuals get liberated from some of the stuff that keeps individuals in bondage. If we're not able to do that, what are we doing it for? Again, we're teaching on possessions, resources, and finances, and this is the PRF table. This thing is not about helping you get rich. It's not about helping you just get out of debt. It's about dealing with the things that we've been talking about, value, resources, stewardship. Those are the things that are more weighty than gold. If you're a good steward, God sees that, even when I don't see it because I'm not living inside of your house. And God will reward you. It's good to be able to say, you know what? I'm taking care of the things I need to be taken care of. Thank you, God. And then when you get those blessings, as we started off back in December, we were talking about blessings. And then when those blessings come, you know that they're blessings and not curses, because you realize and understand that God is rewarding you. I remind everybody to go back and look at it for the first time. I think this is what we'll do, Brother Feast and Sister Sanders. We'll actually post it online, the scripture of 2 Kings chapter 4, because people need to see that it really works. It really works when we come together as a community, when we look at how can we help one another. And I think I'm also going to post the second chapter of Acts 42 to 47 for those who don't really want to fool with the Old Testament. Well, I'll put one as a New Testament scripture out there as well. So we'll have both. So if God can't get you with the old, he can get you with the new. Hopefully he can get you with both so you can get some revelation to do the things that Brother Feaster was talking about and also what Sister Sanders was talking about. So our prayer is that God just does what he needs to do in your life, that you will be able to be helped, that you will be able to help somebody else, because, again, this thing is not about us. It's really about him. So until we meet again, just listen to this song as we end and as we do on every show. Listen to the music, listen to the words, more particularly because at the end of the day, we need each other. And so the name of this song is We Need You Right Now. Y'all have a blessed night. Come back and join with us and sit at the table with us every Thursday from 8 o'clock until God says we're done. Have a good night. We love you. God bless.
There's no one else to turn to, Lord, but you. You're the only answer to the situation. We've got nothing to do. So Master, would you please come down and give us a helping hand? Oh, there's a whole lot of people going hungry. They can get nothing to eat. Oh my. There's a whole lot of people going naked. They don't even.